How bad are your boys getting smacked now?
I don't know. The app stopped working.
Sad.
So, yeah, let me go find some Padilla tweets.
I think the university
Padilla
to
tweets.
Watch it.
Let's see. But
not great.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to beat up Happer.
Beat up?
Yeah, you heard me.
Wow.
I'm not in a good mood, guys. This is like when Dallas lost to the Packers.
Or like when Kennedy lost to Dallas.
Yeah, but Omaha North isn't known for being losers like the Cowboys are.
That's true. They've won state championships.
They have.
Did you hear what Nick just said?
No.
He just said Kennedy lost to Dallas.
Am I wrong?
He took that ultimate knee.
Yeah, that is true. Well, Nick Saban's career took a knee.
Nice.
Very well. John, way to bring us back in.
I'm trying my best.
By the way, we did get one response real fast. It said, this list coupled with playoff expansion, this was Adam, has me pretty excited about college football. I think we're about to see more parity in college football. Will make for an awesome playoff.
Well, we hope so.
One school that might be a part of some of that parity?
We hope Alabama.
We're hoping that they fall off a little bit.
Chris Lowe of ESPN with an in-depth story on the 49 hours. Yes, that's what it was, friends. It was 49 hours from the nanosecond that Nick Saban walked into that team meeting that afternoon in January. Between that and the time that Kalen DeBoer was hired.
Yeah, and Chris Lowe mentions in early part of the story that he told the team that he would have a new coach in place within 72 hours. I remember that anecdote coming out in January, and it was like, wow, they are moving fast. And to give some color on that, which I thought that this was a great piece of information, after the 2022 season, that was when Nick Saban informed Greg Byrne, I don't know how long I can go or how long I will go, and we have to start viewing this on a more, as he's described it, year-to-year basis.
So even though the actual decision, and it's true, Alabama, even Saban himself, was not 100% sure the day he walked into the facility. In fact, he had already engaged in regular team activities. He had interviewed, potential assistant coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the actual moment of truth happened lickety-split, at least there was a few months going back to 2022 where it's just like, hey, prepare yourself.
Yeah,
and so at that point, Greg Byrne, started to put together his list.
Yeah, I'll read the quote, the full quote from Saban, and then what Lowe wrote. He says, I'm not ready to do it now, but we're going to have to start evaluating this more on a year-to-year basis. And then Lowe wrote, while hopeful Saban would keep coaching, Byrne knew deep down that the 72-year-old legend was giving him notice, so he quickly went to work. Byrne had his staff research the college head coaching hires over the past 25 years from the winningest 25 programs during that span. And so I know one of the criticisms have been of this hire, that DeBoer only got it because he had taken Washington to the national championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And that if he hadn't done that, that he wouldn't have been the flavor of the week. And while, look, I cannot refute that exact opinion, going back to what we were just talking about in our previous segment, overall, this guy is 104-12. So even if you remove last year's tremendous season, 14-0 going into that championship game, he still entered the year 111
mm-hmm.
overall. So how much did last year play a part? I'm sure that it did. Because the other guy that it sounds like they were down between was him and Mike Norvell of Florida State. So obviously their success, played a part in it. But, the guy had a lot of success, and Greg Byrne had some notice. This was not a, oh my gosh, we have to do this.
Right.
We have 72 hours. No, he had a plan.
And it sounded like Norvell and DeBoer were very high on his list. The thing that was rather interesting to me was all of the main candidates that either were interviewed or were highly speculated to be candidates all have the same agent.
Yeah.
Jimmy Sexton.
Congrats
to him. Who is also Saban's agent.
Yes, he is.
So, you want to talk about one-stop shopping. You had Norvell, DeBoer, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, all with the same agent. It does make you wonder how it's like to deal with one person knowing that he's representing all of these different interests. And what if they all really wanted the job? How does he balance that?
Yeah, not to mention, how much is Saban letting him in on his thought process, given that, you know, is this like seeing a therapist where, you know, I promise that there is confidentiality here and I'm not going to share it with anybody. There has to be, I guess, right?
There does, but it also seems appropriate that all of these guys got nice raises.
They did indeed. They all did indeed.
And probably going to happen regardless of who their agent is.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the list of coaches.
It does make it rather convenient that these things can be turned around that quickly when they're all basically working under the same umbrella.
Yeah, all these coaches, I mean, it's the list of coaches that you would expect. They had all come off of good seasons, whether it's Dan Lanning up at Oregon, Mike Norvell of Florida State, Steve Sarkisian at Texas. You know, those guys all had great years. You know, some made the playoff. One thought that they should have made the playoff, and Oregon made it to the Pac-12 championship game in year two under Dan Lanning.
But the thing that caught my eye the most were some of the quotes from Saban himself. And I'll read from the story. The 27-20 overtime loss to Michigan in the CFP semifinal was a hard one for Saban to digest. Not only was Saban upset about the way his team played, he was especially disheartened about some of the things that happened afterwards in the Rose Bowl locker room and back on campus when he met with some of the players. Quote, "I want to be clear, that wasn't the reason, but some of those events certainly contributed," Saban said of his decision to retire. "I was really disappointed in the way that the players acted after the game. You got to win with class. You got to lose with class. We had our opportunities to win the game, and we didn't do it. And then showing your ass and being frustrated and throwing helmets and doing that stuff, that's not who we are and what we've promoted in our program." So that's the first thing. He did not like how things were reacted to in the moment.
I wonder how that, I mean, just reading these quotes, it's obvious that that alarmed him, I guess, that they did that. So it makes me think, how did they handle previous losses of this magnitude before? You know, I mean, this program doesn't really have a whole lot of these types of losses.
No, they don't.
But it made me wonder how different it was because, I mean, essentially, and you're gonna read another quote, and I'm guessing I know where you're going, but it's almost a kids these days kind of quote. But like, they lost in the national championship game a couple of years ago. Like, the guy has been super, super successful. He is not Mack Brown, for example. Mack Brown last won his national championship in the 05 season. Mack Brown, if he were to say, yeah, it's just I cannot reach the players now like I did back then, I would at least say that makes sense, that tracks, because that's 19 years ago. Nick Saban won a championship 3 seasons ago. It hasn't been that long. So, like, I guess I'm a bit perplexed on what happened where this team maybe felt that they could, I don't know if get away with something is the right word that I'm looking for, or what exactly happened, especially when, and this shows up in the piece too, he was never prouder to have coached a team in terms of the growth from game one to the end of the year than he was this one.
Once back in Tuscaloosa, as Saban began meeting with players, it became even more apparent to him that his message wasn't resonating like it once did. Quote, "I thought we could have a hell of a team next year, and then maybe 70 or 80% of the players you talk to, all they want to know is two things. What assurances do I have that I'm going to play because they're thinking about transferring, and how much are you going to pay me?" Saban recounted. "Our program here was always built on how much value we can create for your future and your personal development, academic success in graduating, and developing an NFL career on the field. So I'm saying to myself, maybe this doesn't work anymore, that the goals and aspirations are just different and that it's all about how much money I can make as a college player. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's never been what we're all about. And it's not why we've had success through the years." So Saban's basically saying the change of the landscape has led to the change of the attitude, which for a guy of 72 years old and has been doing it his way for a very long time was something very difficult to adjust to. And going back to, you know, the reaction after the game, maybe there had been some of that reaction prior, but maybe how Saban was seeing it was in a light of confirmation bias.
100%. I thought the exact same thing. Like, are we sure that this was that different, or was it more, I do kind of want to leave, and this kind of gives me, you know, a little cover to head out.
It gives me the out
in
which to do so. And I know there's going to be a lot of folks who will look at those quotes and say, well, you've been profiting off of this enterprise and profiting very handsomely for many, many years. Why shouldn't the players get their cut? And as Saban says, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's never been what we're all about, and it's not why we've had success through the years. It is an admission on his part that in a world where the priorities are different or have become different in some or a lot of the young people he's trying to get through to, it's not something he either feels equipped to deal with or able to deal with.
Yeah, Doc texts in, and I think that there is a very good conversation to be had with what he says. He says, Alabama's been paying players for decades now. All of a sudden, when other teams can pay players too, it's too much for Nick because Alabama has competition. And you look at the Tide, and while on the face of things, their roster was the most talented in terms of the raw blue chip ratio metric that we have ever seen in the sport. I did not ever feel this year that I was watching an Alabama team that hovered above the rest of the sport talent-wise. And I have felt that way at other years where I was like, oh my gosh, how do you compete with this? He had a lot of success in the old model where stuff was under the table. And if we're going to pretend that that wasn't happening in Alabama, we'd be kidding ourselves. He was very good. He was the best at it. And while he was still very good in the new model, he wasn't as good. In Alabama, because there's that part of the quote that you read earlier, where here it's about preparing you for the future. That's what it was always about there, where it's you come here and yeah, you'll get some money under the table. But what you're really getting from Alabama is preparation for the NFL. You come here, I know how to get you to the league. You come here and you're good, you're going to get drafted. You come here, you're going to win a national championship. Mm-hmm. He could say that to every single senior class that he ever had from day one until they graduated. Nobody else could say that, but things were a little bit different by the end.
Though, I mean, the email that you read, or the comment that you
read. The text from Doc?
It implies that Alabama was the only one doing it. Everyone was doing it.
Correct. I think they were just doing it in a different way. You know, I guess let me take it this way. Let me theorize this way. Now that everything is above board, now players do feel like they can ask for more money, whereas in the old days you couldn't. You could want it, but it's hard to go to the coach and say, I want it.
Yeah, but I think it's more about the ability to play. It's more about the transfer portal than it is about NIL, I think, is where Saban's coming from. I mean, yes, the how much are you going to pay me? It's now easier, yes, to ask for the money because you know everyone's giving it out and it's now legal than it was in the old days, but the ability to transfer and to do so without penalty has made this much easier to do, because then you feel more emboldened to ask for money because you know if you don't get it, your ability to carry through on your threat to leave is easier because you don't have to sit out a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the combination of the two. But the unlimited, unbridled free agency is probably the bigger, for lack of a better term, devil in this conversation. Because when you don't have to sit out, when you don't have to ask for permission, when you don't have to be bound by anything, you can just pick up and leave at the drop of a hat.
Let me read two more texts, and I want to ask a question that I realize I haven't asked about all this before. So David, first of all, says, I was laughing when we hear coaches say, I'm not exactly saying it's bad or it's wrong, when they clearly, that is exactly what they are thinking. And I certainly thought that was Saban. Another one, this is Adam, and I want to take a question from this. He says, Saban's quotes are the same reason why Jay Wright stepped away, Urban Meyer didn't want to come back, and why Harbaugh went to the NFL. NIL and the transfer portal are pushing legendary coaches out at record speed. All right, so let me ask this question. Should we care? Like, ultimately, the guys...
Well, I think we should. I mean...
He's 72.
Well, yes.
He is not. This is not John Madden. And it's funny because we're people, you know, freaking out about a 42-year-old retiring. Some people just want to get out. Why should I care? Because let me turn it back and look inward at our industry for just a moment. Because sometimes you will hear people in our industry, I mean, we certainly do it at times, we try to have fun with it, but say, I don't know if I would tell you, a young college student, to become a journalist in 2024. And it's like, well, why? And it's like, well, you know, the job might be fun and you might have really cool experiences, but maybe the pay isn't going to be there. Do we need to take a step back and talking about that we are losing journalists at record speed, that we are scaring away people at record speed? And maybe we should. Coaches, it's kind of it's the inverse. The work-life balance is insane, but mm-hmm. the salary is there. And so I don't want to just say, I don't really care, Nick Saban. I mean, about him, he's in his 70s. This is something different than, you know, a 50-year-old coach. If Dan Lanning left college football tomorrow, I would say, holy crap, that's pretty crazy. But they're making so much money. I just don't know why every time one of these guys leaves, we're like, oh, this is such a problem for the sport.
Well,
there are other problems that I care about way more than Nick Saban retiring.
There are, but I think we're not talking about a problem. We're talking about a symptom. And listen, we can agree that the college athletes getting a share is the right thing. But the fact that it's happening with zero regulation, with no rules, that is a problem. And people can mock it all they want. Oh, talking about guardrails again. No, you have to have rules.
Well, no, are you saying rules about the pay? Or are you saying rules about the ability to move? Because those are two different conversations.
Both of them. Both. You need rules on both. Right now, there are no rules on NIL.
You think there should be rules on how much they could? You think you want to cap them?
At some point, that's going to have to happen because it's happened in every professional sport.
In America.
Yes.
In America.
Well, that's the country we're living in.
No, I'm just saying, but why does it have to happen in this one? Why do you have to have a cap? The coaches aren't capped. I just don't understand why the workers always are the ones that have to be capped in this. I would say, what's the reason behind that?
Well, it's more about competitive balance than anything else.
Yeah, college football's loved that for the...
and that's going to be the price to pay for those who want your super leagues. That's what's going to happen.
Well, Maisie Dennis says that nobody has a cap on endorsements. They don't.
No, they don't have a cap on endorsements. So we're not really talking about NIL here. But remember, NIL is being used as pay for play.
100%.
What I'm really talking about is when and if that day comes where they actually are declared employees. Then you can start looking at caps. But the bottom line is, there's no rules on NIL right now, and there's virtually no rules on transferring. And there's got to be something in there that makes it make sense. And right now, you don't have any of that. And those are the problems. The coaches leaving, that's a symptom and a reaction to the problem. Part of it. Yeah, there's going to be coaches. The Matt Rules of the world are going to stick it out, and others will stick it out.
Because I guess what I would say is this. Every generation, a previous generation ages out, and they don't like it anymore.
Sure.
You know? I mean, watch an episode of Mad Men. The older characters on Mad Men are bitching about the current era of society. That's life. Like, I know at some point I'm going to be at an age where I'm like, kids these days don't know what they have. And they don't appreciate it enough. But you know what? Tough luck. I'm not the kid anymore. And it's not my generation that's running things. Like, I do genuinely feel that way. I'm not going to feel bad for Saban. The guy's had an incredible career. I'm not going to feel bad for Jay Wright.
I don't think people are feeling bad for them.
I do.
No.
I think there are a lot of people that feel bad.
You know what they feel bad about? Because remember, in college sports, the coach is the figurehead. The whole front, you know, porch of the university is the athletic department. The guy who answers the door is the BMOC. Who's that?
In
Alabama, it used to be Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's going to be Kalen DeBoer. It's us. It's fans who like that continuity and like watching these legends and like having that stabilization. That's who's really affected. I mean, Saban's fine. They're all going to be fine. Harbaugh's going to be fine because they're all still doing what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know if it's so much feeling for the coaches for realizing they don't want to do it anymore. I think it's more feeling sorry for themselves or ourselves that continuity of having, hey, I know when I watch a Michigan State basketball game, I got Tom Izzo. I know when I'm watching, you know, or used to watch Alabama football, I've got Nick Saban. And now you don't have that. I think it's more from that standpoint, not feeling bad for the coaches.
Adam texts in. He says, I don't feel bad for Saban. I'm just concerned at the direction in which college athletics are going. And look, I'm going to get in line with you there. I'm just not going to use this as part of my reasoning for why I'm concerned at the direction college athletics are going. That is where we need to go higher up on the food chain. But I know that there's just so many conversations that we're all kind of having at the exact same time right now. But that I feel like those are the bigger issues. Everything else is a symptom of what is happening at the mm-hmm. top of conference realignment, of chasing dollars, of trying to kick schools out or push them down or expanding basketball tournaments that don't need expanding. Those are the bigger issues. And mm-hmm. the more that we end up talking about NIL and the transfer portal, the more that I think the people at the top win, because then we're not focused on them, even if it's for 5 minutes at a time.
Well, guess what? Speaking of NIL, that's not so much the transfer portal.
Mm.
Some big news yesterday. And one
big shoes.
And one avenue where I think this would be, if it were to happen.
Is it Electric Avenue?
NIL run amok, and it's not something we want.
Okay. I'm color me intrigued.
Coming up next on 1620 The Zone.